We'll stick with the wildlife theme. Even on a winter day like today, if you can get away from traffic and other human noises for a bit, you can hear the sounds of birds chattering in the trees. It's a nice reminder that nature is there, no matter how urbanized our environment otherwise. Our next guest goes to where the birds are and records them in still pictures, in video, and sound only. Garrett Vinn is a producer for the Cornell Lab of Ornithology and senior fellow of the International League of Conservation Photographers. He'll be in Klamath Falls next month, Valentine's Day to be exact, delivering a keynote address at the famed Winter Wings Conference. Garrett Vinn is willing to spend a little time with us by phone. Hi, Garrett.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Tell us, if you would, how big or small is the field of people who follow birds for a living? And like, have you and Nathan Peeplo, one of the other keynotes, run into each other a lot?
I've actually never met Nathan, but I know he does a lot of work with bird songs and bird song recording and analyzing the vocal lives and languages of birds. So I'm familiar with some of his work, but I've never run into him.
So it's not that closed a community, not that small a community anyway.
Well, it's kind of like any other big hobby or profession. There's all sorts of shades of, you know, people that are hardcore science, people that are studying one particular species of bird, to your backyard bird watchers, to people that are in all sorts of other niches, you know, around the world of birds. So in one way or another, you know, there's millions of people that are interested and attached to birds. And then, you know, smaller numbers of people in all these kind of different, more specialized studies or hobbies or pursuits that surround bird life and wildlife.
It's
hard to put a number on it.
Okay, yeah, it sounds like from childhood you had an interest in animals anyway. What turned the fascination to birds?
That's a good question. I definitely started out being way more interested in turtles and snakes and reptiles and amphibians, and then I was into mammals, and birds really came last for me. I think, you know, as a kid, you get used to looking down and things you can pick up and hold and look at and catch, if you're into nature and the outdoors, and birds seemed what's much more removed from my everyday experience. But I went to a nature center when I was, I think, 14 or 15, and they had these winter bird feeders up, and, you know, I saw all these birds, and I'm like, really? These live right outside my door? And from that day on, I, you know, started looking through my field guide, and then spring migration came, and all of a sudden this whole new world was opened up to me that, yeah, all these beautiful birds that, you know, you look in a book and you think, oh, these are things you would never see. They're all really all around us all the time. Once you start to look and listen and really pay attention.
I noticed a couple of Stellar's jays near me yesterday on the way back to work after lunch. So, yeah, just that sort of thing where if you get your eyes open, they're out there.
Yeah, and there's just so many kinds of birds that people just never notice. If you have a pair of binoculars and a field guide, you'll be amazed at all of the different birds that are right around our homes and lives.
Now, Garrett, you've got a couple of biology degrees, at least one, but how did you end up in the zone you're in now, photographing and recording birds?
That's also a good question. It's kind of a twisty road. I was always very keenly into natural history since I was young. I was very into photography and wildlife photography, and I was building a career as a wildlife photographer, and that at any stage in time was a difficult niche to get into and start making a living at. And sometime around when I think I was 30 years old, the Cornell Lab was looking for somebody that had really comprehensive knowledge of North American bird sounds and hired me to come in and do a job basically to review the collection there. The Cornell Lab holds the largest collection of animal sounds in the world. And I went in there to review the North American collection, see what might be missing. And that kind of led to a process where I was going around the country recording bird song and kind of filling out this collection, which then evolved into we started a film team focused on conservation type issues where we can present, you know, with the authority of a university like Cornell, some of these conservation issues in a very science-based manner. And we started this team, and it just kind of evolved over time. So now that where I'm at now is, you know, kind of doing all of that photography, editorial stuff, films, and still some sound recording as well.
So are you actually employed by the Cornell Lab of Ornithology, or do you work for yourself and contract with them?
No, I'm on the staff at Cornell, but okay. I live out here in Oregon.
Yeah, a good place to be, to, as we obviously feel. Garrett Venn's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, a bird photographer, producer for the Cornell Lab of Ornithology, senior fellow of the International League of Conservation Photographers, coming to talk about what he does to the Winter Wings Festival in Klamath Falls on Friday, February 14th, preceded by Nathan Peeplo, who we visited with already, and succeeded by Rosemary Mosco on the 15th at Winter Wings. You got questions or comments for Garrett about what he does? Join us on the Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Some of the organizations you've worked with, you did principal photography for the PBS Nature episode on the Sagebrush Sea. Was any of that done in Oregon's high desert?
I don't believe so. I think most of the filming I did was in Oregon, and I did a little bit in Idaho and a little bit in Washington State. Mm-hmm. At the time, I was living up in Seattle, so anything that was close at hand that I could get out in the sagebrush, I went out into eastern Washington and did. But probably 90% of the film was filmed in western Wyoming.
Now, the story of the sage grouse is sort of what makes birds important, I think, is what you've indicated in your work previously, that birds are really good indications of the overall health of an ecosystem.
Yep, absolutely. Throughout time, birds have been these, migratory birds have told us that spring is coming, farmers when to plant their crops, and, all since the beginning of time, people have looked to birds as telling us different things about the environment around us. And, watching and counting birds is a relatively easy way to look at what's happening in the environment. They're so conspicuous, countable. People like to look at them, like to watch them. So by monitoring and looking at bird populations, we can get a pretty good idea sometimes, or an early warning of when some underlying problem is there, in the environment or particular habitat or region. Back in the 70s with DDT, birds were the first ones to really tip us off that, there's these invisible pollutants, chemicals that are also dangerous to humans that we weren't really paying attention to and didn't know about until all of a sudden we found that bald eagles, peregrine falcons, and brown pelicans were not able to reproduce because of the effects of these chemicals. So, there's all sorts of ways in which by monitoring, paying attention to bird populations, we can learn things about, the world around us and our effect on the environment.
I was just calling up an image online that people can go see. Oh, just type in DDT is good for me, and you'll see how we actually used to advertise this stuff back in the day. The Pennsylvania Salt Manufacturing Company had that big advertisement that shows singing farm animals. DDT is good for me. Boy, we came a long way from there, didn't we?
Well, we still have people singing songs about things that are bad for us. So maybe on DDT we've evolved, but, I think once you get into the details of a lot of the other things that are pushed through private interests, that there's still a lot of things out there where we're getting messages that aren't necessarily accurate.
So Garrett Venn, what other rare or sensitive species have you spent some time watching, recording?
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the big early trips I did was to record the life of a really enigmatic bird called the spoon-billed sandpiper. And the last individuals, there's probably only about 200 pairs left on Earth. They live and nest up in Siberia, in Chukotka, in a part of Russia, kind of right across from Alaska. And I spent about 2 months up there filming for the first time those birds and their nests and their chicks coming out of the nest. And from that spun off a large effort to produce science-based materials that nonprofits, mostly in China and South Korea, could use to help move the needle on protection of intertidal areas in the Yellow Sea, which is the main bottleneck in their migration and the main reason why they've declined so precipitously. So that was one of the big first real far-off expeditions I did to record a bird in a far-off land that was in real serious trouble.
Some of the pictures are just plain staggering. I mean, the level of detail that you get from your cameras, and it looks like you're up close, like not just with a long lens. I mean, so talk about methods. Do you wear bird costumes or something to get up close to these?
No. Oftentimes I do work in a blind. So, you know, most people are familiar with what a blind is, you know, hunting blind type of thing. You know, a small tent that you hide in. And for most animals, you know, a blind in a landscape, they still see it. But what you need to hide is the human form. So hiding in a blind is often a way that I work. A lot of times it's just a matter of spending a lot of time with finding individual birds or animals that are less afraid of people and getting them used to you and kind of just, you know, you want them to know you're there and you don't want to startle them. But you just kind of build up that trust over time and you can get closer and closer.
Well, that really does take some patience then, doesn't it?
It does, you know, because you're also dealing with weather and logistics and all those other kind of things that you can't control. So when you find an animal that's cooperative, it's always a bonus.
Truly. But do you sometimes set up the blind, and it's a little camouflage tenty looking thing, and you get the blind, the tripods, the cameras, all. Do you ever walk away with nothing worth publishing that just doesn't work out?
Probably more often. That's probably what happens most of the time. Yeah.
Truly. Wow.
You know, yeah. It's one of those things where you strategize and strategize and try to maximize your chances of success. I think one of the kind of defining factors of a more professional photographer or filmmaker is they are able to identify and recognize when they're wasting their time on something and to really hone in on those opportunities that have the best odds for producing results. So you're kind of constantly going through this calculus of all these different variables and trying to figure out what's the best chance for success. But still, it doesn't always work out.
Right. That's amazing to hear that it is that an empty bag that often. Garrett Vinn is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, a bird photographer, producer for the Cornell Lab of Ornithology, senior fellow of the International League of Conservation Photographers, speaking at Winter Wings in Klamath Falls on Friday, February 14th, Valentine's Day. Got questions or comments? Join us at 800-838-3760 or send emails to jx@jeffnet.org. What do you notice in your work, Garrett, about birds and climate sensitivity? We hear plenty of reports of birds showing up further north than they used to, for example.
Yeah, well, I think anybody who's spent a lot of time outside their whole life and, you know, paid attention to their surroundings and to nature and to wildlife, you can see the subtle changes that are happening all around us. And in some places, it's not so subtle. There's, you know, profound ecological collapses happening in parts of our world. We've seen what's happening with the fires in Australia, the Great Barrier Reef that we all grew up, you know, reading about in books is, you know, 90-whatever% dead. I've been working in seabird colonies in Alaska, where in the Bering Sea, where, you know, we get half of the fish we eat every year, and all of a sudden, we're having these massive bird die-offs and birds not nesting like they have for year after year after year. So there's just a lot of these anecdotal things that you see that, you know, scientifically they don't necessarily eat, you know, an isolated event doesn't mean climate change every time. But the trend that we're seeing over and over and over is that wildlife populations in many parts of the world are struggling.
Greatly disrupted in their normal patterns anyway.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's something that you pretty much can see in one way or another everywhere if you're kind of in tune to that kind of stuff.
Have you had some big surprises doing your work? I mean, things that you went out to the field not looking for and then they showed up anyway.
Probably most of the time, you know, you get opportunities to film or shoot things that you weren't expecting. Sometimes it's surprising that you'll get individuals of a species that are all of a sudden very cooperative when otherwise they're completely uncooperative. I remember one year I spent like 24 hours hiding in a camouflage under a tarp on the wet tundra trying to make audio recordings of an Arctic breeding loon called the yellow-billed loon. And it was kind of the holy grail of that trip and ended up being mostly a failure. These loons were swimming around my microphones and never made a peep. And then a couple of years later, I was out filming the Spoon-Billed Sandpiper in Russia, and just by happenstance, there was this random tame pair of yellow-billed loons out there in the middle of nowhere in Russia that just put on this amazing vocal display for me that I'd never anticipated, and it was a real highlight of a wonderful opportunity to make an incredible recording of a really beautiful sound in nature.
Did you have to wait several hours to get back to some place where you could say, yes, yes, I got it?
I think I actually took a selfie. This is back before with a thumbs up.
Uh-huh.
to send back to let people know I'd had success.
That was
a big undertaking, that trip.
Wow, that was a good payoff. We have an email here from Lori, I assume from Talent. She mentions the Wagner Creek area. I don't know if you know anything about this, but it's rather specific locally. Wants to know if you could comment on a robin event they had last month for several weeks. Thousands or maybe millions of robins descended on nearby madrone trees to devour berries. It happened one other time in the last 15 years here in the Wagner Creek area. Thanks from Lori.
That's pretty cool. Robins and waxwings and European starlings too they kind of migrate as far south as they need to. They're not like some of these birds that migrate from the boreal forest all the way to South America. Robins kind of get pushed by the cold weather and by food availability just as far as they need to go south. And during the winter, they do form these very large flocks and will descend on, areas of fruiting trees when the fruit is ripe. And you can see, in these places like this, all of a sudden these, just waves of robins and sometimes waxwings and starlings too, that will come in and just decimate an area of all of its berries and then move on again. So that does happen. It's not predictable necessarily, and it depends on the fruit crop and where the robins happen to be that year. But that's a pretty spectacular thing when you see that many robins just swarming over an area.
That's pretty impressive to watch. Just a couple seconds left. Where are you off to next, Garrett?
Well, my next stop is Winter Wings over there in Klamath Falls. I don't have anything much planned immediately after that, but I'm really looking forward to seeing the Klamath Basin in the winter. I was there a bit this summer, and just the wetlands there and the amount of birds there is pretty spectacular. So I'm really excited to get out there and see snow geese and the bald eagles that come into that area and all the other birds. So
it's pretty wild to see the bald eagles sitting on the telegraph wires next to the railroad line, stuff like that. Garrett Vinn, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, a producer for the Cornell Lab of Ornithology, has taken many pictures, movies, and sound recordings of birds around the world. He'll be at Winter Wings on February 14th. Thanks so much for joining us on the Exchange today.
My pleasure.